Okay. Okay, here we go. Parshios, Bahar and Bechukosai, Tafshin Ayin. Our subject today is to get a deeper understanding of the bracha and the klala, blessing and curse, compare and contrast, or to see why it's not the same as schar va'onesh, reward and punishment. The words, you know, often we work with little words. We're going to work with the word baruch, Beis Reish Chaf, Baruch, which is, of course, starts every bracha and also such a very common word. We're going to work with the word Kol, everything, Chaf Lamed, the word Yam, Yud Mem. And the question we want to answer is this basic philosophical question: why do we really celebrate Shavuos when it ended in a kind of disaster and we do not have the Torah that was given on Shavuos? We have the Torah that was given on Yom Kippur, the second Luchos. That's really when we were makabel the Torah, and that's the Torah that stayed with us. What we have from the original Shavuos is some of the broken shards of the Luchos that don't even have the words on them. Remember, the words flew off and that Moshe smashed the stone. What does that all mean? What does that mean? We have some remnant of the first Luchos, but we don't have them really. So why don't we, you know, we do celebrate Yom Kippur, obviously, as a form of Kabbalah, the Torah all over again, but it's funny to celebrate Shavuos. And so that's really also our question. So in order to start, what we're going to do is, you know, thinking about, is that we're going to think about the curses, the blessings and the curses that are very clearly stated in Parshas Bechukosai. If you look through the Parsha, this is where the threats, the warnings are, and also the promises, how things will be if we're good and how things will be if we're not so good. And if we're good, basically, to put it in, you know, a nutshell, the crops will grow abundantly, there'll be so much, you know, so much wealth, so much prosperity, and their children will be healthy, and there'll be peace on their borders, and there won't be any illness, you know, all the blessings of a peaceful life in this world. However, if we begin to neglect the Torah, begin to abdicate our responsibility and abandon Hashem and the ways of Hashem, things will not go well for us, and the warnings are very terrible and tragic, and we've lived through them. We've certainly lived through pretty much everything that's been described in this week's parsha. So the first thing is to know that bracha, the bracha and the klala, the blessing and the curses described in this week's parsha, have absolutely nothing to do with reward and punishment, because we have a basic principle, schar mitzvah b'hai al maleka. The reward for a mitzvah in this world does not exist. And we'll understand, hopefully, today why it cannot exist in this world. There is no way to have reward for a mitzvah in this world. And anything material can never be the reward for a spiritual accomplishment, because they're not of the same nature at all. They don't exist in the same world. One can't compensate for the other. So first, let's look at chapter 9. Although you have chapter 8 and chapter 9, we're going to start with chapter 9. If this is from the Rambam Hilchas Tshuva. Okay. In Hilchos Tshuva are fundamental principles such as this, other than just the actual Tshuva concepts. So you're going to read this whole thing on your own free time. But the main point here that I want you to notice is that Rambam says the second page, the bottom paragraph, page 82, where it says, consequently, okay, the rest you should read on your own. Consequently, the blessings and curses can be explained as follows. If you serve God joyfully, observing his ways, he will bestow on you these blessings and remove from you these curses, so you can study the Torah, engrossing yourself in it to merit life in the world to come. So in other words, the reason Hashem will give you all the brachas of crops and, in other words, health, wealth, and happiness, so you do not have distraction and you do not have, crises and trauma and things to deal with, is simply so that you have an opportunity to merit life in the world to come. In other words, the bracha here is really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us an opportunity by giving us bracha to really get to the point of our existence, which is to merit, do things that will earn us the world to come, to have the wherewithal to study Torah and to do mitzvahs without distraction, without crises, without problems. So he quotes, good will be granted to you in the world that is entirely good, and you will live long in the world that is entirely long. And we will get back to this pasuk because that's describing the next world. It's a world that's entirely good and entirely long. In Hebrew, it's shekulo tov and shekulo aruch. The entire thing is tov, and the entire thing is aruch, okay, is long. Now, shekulo tov or shekulo aruch. Then he says, thus you will merit two worlds, a good life in this world, which in turn will bring you to life in the world to come. If a person does not acquire wisdom or good deeds in this world, he will not be able to gain entrance to the world to come. As it says in Koheles, there is no action, no reasoning, no knowledge, no wisdom in the grave. On the other hand, if the Jewish people turn their back on God, indulging in food, drink, immorality, etc., he will bring these curses upon them, removing the blessings, so they live in constant fear and confusion. They will lack the peace of mind and stamina to fulfill the mitzvahs. Thereby, they will lose life in the world to come. They will be deprived of two worlds. For when a person is perturbed by sickness, war, and famine in this world, he cannot involve himself in wisdom or mitzvahs to merit life in the world to come. So the principle that Rambam states here, if you go back to the beginning, is that the bracha here is that we have peace and quiet. Look at the paragraph before. God will also shower on us the good things that foster our observance of the Torah. These include abundance, peace, profusion of silver and gold, so that we are not busy working for a livelihood, but have time to study wisdom and perform the mitzvot, thus meriting life in the world to come. So Rambam is making it very clear. The whole point of the bracha is to give us the best chance to earn olam haba, which is schar. Okay, that's how they work together. Bracha is an opportunity to earn schar. And then he goes on, if you look at the last part in the Messianic age, that the age of Mashiach is an age of, not schar, an age of so much bracha that all we can do in that time, well, we have so much opportunity. The opportunity is enormous to increase our knowledge of Hashem. So look at the quotes he brings down. In that era, knowledge, wisdom, truth will flourish, as it says in Yeshayahu. The earth will be full of the knowledge of Hashem. No longer will they need to teach one another and say to one another, know God, for all of them will know me. I'll remove from them the heart of stone. I will remove the heart of stone from your body and give you a heart of flesh. This will come to pass in the Messianic days. And he says, that's why the Nevi'im always yearned for the days of Mashiach, so that they could have an opportunity to gather mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim and Torah in order to earn Olam Haba. So that's premise number one. It's very definite, very concrete. That's what bracha and klala is, blessing and curse. That is, though, nothing to do with reward and punishment. When you get to schar, reward and punishment, we're talking about something entirely different. But before we go into the Rambam and analyze the words, what we're going to do is we're going to describe it through a mashal of what happens between this world and the next world. What happens to all the mitzvahs we do, all the Torah we learned, all the good deeds, all the things, you know, every time we extended ourselves in a mitzvah aseh or a mitzvah lo aseh, what happens to that, to those accomplishments in the next world? What happens between the physical world, where you give one person a dollar, which is a physical material thing, and they buy an apple, which is a material thing, and then they digest it in their bodies, which is a material thing, and then how does that turn into some eternal reward of spiritual in nature? So the way we're going to begin to work with this subject is to give a mashal of what it means to be, you know, blind and how much you could do when you're blind, right? Would we all agree that a blind person can very, very competently teach a course on traffic safety? Sure, they can say, there is a traffic light at the intersection, and it's yellow, and it's oblong, and it has in it three lights, right? Three lights, and they're different colors. And the top light is red, and sometimes it's dull, but sometimes it shines brightly. And when the red light, when you see the red light, it means you should stop. And beneath it, there's a yellow light. And when it shines brightly, you see this glow of yellow, it means you should speed up. And then when you see the green light underneath it, you should go, etc., right? And then there's stop signs, and they're octagonal, and they're red and white, right? And then there's yellow signs that say yield. A blind person can very competently teach a traffic safety course and talk all about colors they've never seen, talk about bright and dull, which they have no idea what that means, right? Talk about what you do with those colors, how you're supposed to act when you see those colors. That's no problem. That's perfectly possible. But what's missing, we know, is that that blind person has no real understanding. They have knowledge. They have knowledge of the mechanics. They can describe it. They can tell you how to respond to it. But they don't have understanding of what red means, what bright means. They don't have any understanding of the things they're talking about. So when that blind person is somehow miraculously gifted with sight, and begins to see what happens, everything they talked about, everything that they knew perfectly in terms of what you're supposed to know about it, to what extent you can know about it, and how you're supposed to respond to it, all of a sudden doesn't just make sense. How would you describe the transition? They begin to go from knowledge to understanding. The word we're going to use is from really, increasing information, they could more and more information, to the not increase of more information. They're not getting an increase. They're getting an expansion. That's the word, an expansion of what they know. It's beginning to expand into all kinds of understandings, dimensions they couldn't grasp. They had no clue because it wasn't something they were even capable of seeing. They couldn't see it, so how could they understand it? They are getting understanding or expansion. That word expansion is very important. That's really the transition between this world and the next world, between what we do and know here and what happens to that knowledge in the Olam HaEmes, which we call the world of truth. Really, what you might say is right here, through all the Torah we learn, and let's say we say Tehillim, and we don't know what the words mean. We daven, and the words of davening were written by the Chachamim when there still was nevuah in the world. So they're words of nevuah. That means they have a powerful spiritual impact. And then you do mitzvahs, which some are chukim, though you don't know why you have to do them. Some have a tam, which we'll talk about. But then what about this? Besides the actual mitzvahs that do or don't have explanations, how many ideas do we speak about, like the blind man speaking about traffic, law, that we don't know, we have no understanding what we talk about, and yet we talk about it. For example, we say, everything Hashem does is for the good. Do we understand it? No, we just say it. And we have emuna, that one day we'll understand it. When we say that tzadik v'ralo, rasha v'tovlo, that tzadikim often suffer, and rashaim often prosper, and it's all good. We just say it. Do we know what we're talking about? When we talk about Olam Haba, do we know what we're talking about? Of course not. When we talk about even Schar, we don't know what we're talking about, as much as we can try to get some type of feeling for it. And do we understand why we shake a lulav? What that does? Why we eat kosher? Why? So we think, you're right, there's a lot out there that we go through the motions, we talk about it, we trust it, we explain it, we live by it, but we have no understanding of it, not here, not now. And even the areas that we think we do have understanding, we don't have any understanding. For example, we talk about chukim, things that have no meaning, no explanation, like shatnes, classic chok, or para aduma, the red cow, right? Or kashrus, it's a chok, right? So we think of those things, they're rules. But then there are mitzvahs that we really, really understand. They make sense. We respond to them. We love them. They're part of us. Shabbos, for example, it's testimony that Hashem created the world. Tells us what our tachlis is, our purpose. We love it. We're involved in it. We think, that's an integrated, understood kind of, that we have understanding. But we don't. Nothing. Now, the example that my grandfather always used to give, and we probably have talked about it here at some point, is that even the so-called reasons for mitzvahs are not called the siba of the mitzvah. They're called the tam, the taste of the mitzvah. If you think about the function of taste, what is the purpose of taste? And for that matter, color, and for that matter, texture. Okay? What is the point of it? It has nothing to do with the nutritional value of the food that we're eating. The point of all of those things, color, taste, texture, that is to make it pleasant to eat, to make it exciting, to make give us variety so we're not bored because we're curious people and we get bored of things, to make it palatable, to make it interesting. It's a chesed. It's a chesed to, you know, spice up our lives. But we know that the nutritional value is not directly related to the taste of the food. You can't just derive one from the other. What is the point of the food? It's to give us, it's to, you know, to strengthen us with what's in the food, right? So as soon as we swallow it, things start to, or even before swallowing, actually, already in the mouth, the digestion begins, and things start happening that we have no connection to. We don't even know it's happening. The food is being digested. Acids are being extracted, and minerals are being extracted, and vitamins are being extracted, and the spleen and the kidneys get to work, and the liver is cleaning what ends up in the blood, and then the peristalsis in the intestines, and everything is getting involved to process that food, distribute its nutrients. We don't even think about it right now. Nobody is thinking about that. That's happening right now in our bodies from our breakfast. It has an effect on us that we are not aware of. That is the case with every single mitzvah, even the ones we think we understand. All we gain from a mitzvah, from the tam, is that it feels good to do it. We respond to it emotionally, which is important. You need that in life. You need that. We're human beings. We need to feel engaged emotionally and spiritually, intellectually with the mitzvahs. So Hashem gives us that. But if we think that's the totality of the mitzvah, that's not at all. That's nothing. It's the surface. It's the tip of the iceberg. It's just the tam. It's the taste. And then that mitzvah begins to have an effect on us, or the tehillim we say, or the davening we say, or the Torah we learn, or the ideas we talk about, or the averus we don't do, whatever, all those things. They begin to have an effect on us. They begin to strengthen us in ruchnius. They begin to create for us whole worlds, eternal worlds of continued existence that these mitzvahs bring to us. But we can't see it, really. We see the person developing somewhat, you know, a better person, a kinder person, a more honest person, a more spiritual person. But nevertheless, something much, much, much more is going on. Now, this concept that as much as we know nothing, and it's not for here. Our eyes will not be opened here. We won't be like the blind person who all of a sudden sees what they were talking about. Not in this world. Moshe asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to see more, to understand, and his answer, Hashem's answer was, Lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. A man cannot see me. And the word Hashem uses, see. See is the mashal, to open your eyes and see what you're talking about. No person can see me and live. It's not for this world to understand. In the next world, everything we've gathered into all these mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim and Torah ideas and Torah learning that we've gathered I think about it as like increasing this like core of our spiritual core with greater and greater and greater and greater density. The more dense our core is in terms of the mitzvahs and the ma'asim tovim and the learning, the more there is to expand in the olam ha'emes. That's what begins to expand. And that expansion, the possibility of that expansion is infinite. We say that tzaddikim have no menucha, not in this world and not in the next world. But the lack of menucha or rest in the next world is not a bad thing. It's this constant expansion, more and more and more understanding of the things we spent our time with here. That's the nature of what we call the Olam Ha'emes. Now, here is where Rambam begins to talk about this concept in different words in chapter 8 in the world to come. And then we're going to begin, after we read this, to talk about the word Kol and the word Yam and the word Baruch and Sfira Saomer and Shavuos, how this all ties in. So just look at chapter 8. Okay, so look at 8:2, right? So he states there's no physical bodies, there are no physical bodies in the world to come. Only the souls of tzaddikim without a body exist, similar to the malachei hasharis, the ministering angels. No eating, no drinking, etc. So the sages say, in the world to come, there's no eating, drinking, sexual relations, but the righteous sit with their crowns on their head, deriving pleasure from the radiance of the Shekhinah. So there is no body. There is no eating or drinking. When they say the righteous sit, it is metaphoric, meaning they exist without labor or exertion. In other words, when the person's eyes are open, they're not increasing anymore. They're not struggling to gain. They're just getting a whole nother gift of understanding that's just a result of what they already knew. Their eyes open up. In the same vein, the phrase, the crown on their heads, is also a metaphor implying that they retain all the knowledge they acquired during their life on earth, which enabled them to enter the world to come. This knowledge is their crown, as Shlomo says, referring to wisdom, and he quotes from Shir HaShirim, the crown which his mother crowned him. Proof that the crown is a symbol for knowledge is seen in the verse from Yeshayahu, everlasting joy will be on your head. Joy is not a tangible object, and that can rest on someone's head. And with the same token, when they talk about a crown, they mean something intangible, namely knowledge. And deriving pleasure from the radiance of the Shekhinah means they will grasp the truth. That's what we're talking about. Grasping the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which they could not fathom while confined in the dark and lowly body. That's the understanding, the eyes opening, the grasping. And if you go further, he speaks about here that the wonderful things here. Look in 8:7. The wonderful things the prophets foretold Israel do not refer to the reward in the world to come. That's what we just spoke about. Rather, their prophecies involve only the physical delights which Israel will enjoy in the Messianic age, when supremacy over the world will be given to Israel. Even this cannot compare to the goodness of life in the world to come. The prophets did not describe it for fear their descriptions would not do it justice. Because how could you describe something you haven't seen, right? You don't have the understanding of. This means the goodness of the world to come, which has never been seen by a prophet and was only seen by Hashem, was created by Hashem for those who trust in him. Prophets only prophesied up until the Messianic age, but not beyond, not into this world. And then he goes on to say the world to come doesn't mean it doesn't exist now. It does exist now. Many neshamas are there. Just in the chronology of a person's life, each person goes from this world to the next world. But it is in full existence right now. It's like a parallel world. So when the Rambam speaks about the world to come, he makes a clear distinction that it's the increasing of knowledge, things we couldn't perceive here. Now, even Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, he felt that everything he knew and all the understanding he had was nothing. And he was right. It was nothing compared to the real, the world of pure emes, the real, you know, complete understanding of what it's all about, of all the, you know, what the spiritual worlds that we can't even use physical words to describe. Moshe says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ata HaChelosa, now you just started to show me your honor, to teach me, just at the end. But nevertheless, there is, like in every way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us in this world moments where we get an experience of that expansion. Just moments. It's not for this world, but it's a glimpse. When Hashem, when we describe the Torah, Moshe Shapiro says this, when one of the ways the Torah is described is in Iyov, it's Aruka Me'eretz Mida, Urechava mini yam, longer in midah, in measurement, than land, longer than measured land, and wider than the sea. We're going to compare now the concept of measuring land, which you measure with midos, like amos, right? A midah is a measurement, and how you think about the yam, about the sea. So we know that when we, let's say, talk about measuring land, we talk about, let's say, America. How many miles long is it? Well, it extends from the Atlantic Ocean all the way to the Pacific Ocean. So it's X amount of miles, okay? Those are the midos, the measurements. By the way, mida in gematria, mem, 40, dalid, hey, 49, okay? This world, this land is measured in mida, in 49. 49 is a very important number. It's 7 times 7. 7 is a very important number. Everything that has to do with the material bria, with the creation, is 7. 7, right, this is 7 days of the week, 7 millennia, 7 years till Shemitah, and then 7 times 7 till Yovel, Shemitah and Yovel, okay? That teaches us that 7, you know, we work and we work and we work, and then in the 7th, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, and 7 times 7, that's like the epitome, the completion, the shlemus of utilizing the material world, the 6 days of creation for Shabbos, the 6 days of years of planting for Shemitah, working towards the 7th, which is the fulfillment, the completion of the sense of utilizing everything material correctly, positively, the right direction. That's 49. On this earth, the most we can do is reach 49, 7 times 7. Everything in the physical world, material world, at work, engaged in bringing us to the next level. But we don't get to the 50th, really, in this world. So we talk about land, we talk about midos, 49, extension. How far does this land extend? And in the land, you have special places. You have this city and that city, identifiable places, correct? We don't talk about the land mass expanding and overtaking the oceans, do we? We don't, to be right. But we do when we think about the ocean now. Think about the ocean not in terms of length, how many miles long is it, or in terms of places. The ocean has no places in the ocean. It's just relative to an island that you can, so near that island or off that shore. But you don't have places in the ocean. And we don't think about the ocean in terms of length. When we think about the ocean and the nature of the ocean, we think about the ocean expanding, right? It does expand. It's expanding, right? It's overflowing its limits. Look at Tennessee and all the endless floods and how many times places were flooded. And look at California. You know, the ocean encroaches. It expands. And we have a lot of discussion about, if not for the seashore and the limits that Hashem has imposed upon the ocean, it would expand and expand and flood the whole world, right? So when we talk about the Yam, which is gematria what? 50. We talk about expansion, that quality of increasing and increasing. Now the Torah is considered like a Yam, Yam HaTorah. Here the Torah is described as longer than the measured length, and wider than the sea. These two ideas, wider or it's a rochava. The word for expansion or width is rochav. How wide it is, how much it, right, how much it increases, but not in terms of measured length, but almost as if it increases from within itself. So here in this pasuk, the two ideas are linked together. The Torah both has the length and the width. It's longer than the land and wider than the sea, which is meant to say, in the Torah are these two qualities. It is the possibility of increasing and increasing like land. You could longer and more and more and more miles, this way or that way, increasing, midah, increasing and increasing and increasing, mitzvahs and Torah and all of that. And that builds for us, as like we said, a core, a spiritual core within us that begins to expand and expand and expand without any limits. Even the malachim, who get more and more understanding. By the way, my grandfather says in the tefillah book that the neshamas of the people that earned Olam Haba are the Malachi Hashares. They're the Mishorsim. And as they live in the next world, their minds, their understanding increases and increases and increases. There is no end. That's why the joy of the next world has no limit. It has no boundaries. And that's why the Malachim say, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. As they get to one degree of Kadosh, they see there's another degree beyond it. And they get to the next degree of Kaddush, and there's another degree beyond it. There's no end. But a person comes to that world only with what they've accomplished in this world. So that's what we say. This world, hayom lasosam. This world is to do and to do and to do. And mahar, in the tomorrow, in the future, lekabel schar, to receive schar. And now, and we're working with the word yam, 50. Okay? 50 is the mashal for the Torah. Torah is yam ha-Torah, we said. 50 is the mashal for the 50th day. That's Shavuos. 50 is also yovel, right? Here, he brings a pasuk. He brings a pasuk here from Mishlei. Lahanchil ohava yesh v'otrosehem amale. Lahanchil ohava yesh, to bequeath, to give a nachala to those that love me of yesh. What is yesh? V'otrosehem amale, and I will fill their treasure houses. In other words, we build treasure houses here. We build a place that holds all the treasures. That's all the mitzvahs. That's all our ruchnius. Then what does Hashem do when he gives us, he bequeaths to us yesh? He fills those treasure houses. He fills them up. We have them ready. Then Hashem fills them. That's the concept of schar, with understanding. Yesh, Rav Moshe Shapiro brings down, represents yovel and shmita, the concept of 4777 to 49, and then the 50th. Shmita represents some of these ideas. My grandfather used to say, yesh, yira shamayim. Everyone's working with the word yesh. What does yesh mean? To bequeath, to give a person yira shamayim, that will create a possibility to have a treasure house, which Hashem will then fill. There's another word that also has a gematria for 50 that is very associated with this idea. And that is the word kol. 20 plus 30. Kol. Okay? The famous place where kol was compared and contrasted to harbe. Exactly. Esav says, yesh li rov, I have harbe, a lot. Yaakov says, take whatever you want because I have kol. I have everything. Now, what can he possibly mean? Obviously, it's not pshat. How does a person have everything? If you're the Queen of England and the richest sheik in Saudi Arabia and Bill Gates, you still don't have everything. There's nobody who has every single thing in the whole wide world. Well, how can a person say, yesh li kol? So we have to understand what the nature of kol is. Kol is 50. Kol is the notion that whatever I have here, it's not about having more physical things. Whatever I have here in this world has the possibility to expand, to become kol, to expand into something that is eternal and limitless and encompasses everything. Notice that they're talking about physical gifts. Yaakov is expressing the Jewish person's approach to physical things, which he's giving Esav. When we think about how we should approach material things, you know, physical acquisitions, the whole thing can be summed up by looking at the bracha in the dough of the lechem mishneh, lechem hapanim, the showbread, on the table in the Beis HaMikdash. Because we know that in the Beis HaMikdash there were three kalim, we've talked about that. The shulchan represented everything material and physical, the staple of life, that's the bread. The menorah represented intellect, and the golden mizbeach represented the ruchnius. So when you look at the shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash, the bracha be'isa was what? The Gemara says, but it stresses something else. You eat a little bit, and it expands within you. That's what it says. You eat a little, and it expands within you. That's the approach to material things. We know that how much a person can do with what they have, you know, is not an exact formula. People have a lot and can do very little with it in Ruchnius, don't do very much with it in Ruchnius, don't turn it into something that can expand in the next world. And some people have very little, and what they have and what they do is so packed, so dense with mitzvahs that it can expand indefinitely, endlessly. So Yaakov uses the word kol. I have kol. I have whatever I have in this world. It can become, can acquire the quality of kol, of 50, of expansion. Now, That word kol is also associated with the crowns that Rambam just talked about on the heads of the tzaddikim in the world to come. Because we say Shabbos morning in the davening, Shemona Esrei, Moshe came down, Kliel Tiferes Barosho. Kliel is a crown of Tiferes from the Shoresh, Pe'er. Pe'er is a crown, a glorious crown. Barosho, he had the Luchos. That's where we talk about Shavuos. And he had a Kliel, he had a crown. The Shoresh of Kliel is Kol. He had holding a Torah, which gives him a crown, which means it's the quality that allows what he knows here to eventually become kol. The Torah is a mechanism that we're given here that allows us to turn this world and our finite years here into something without end, without limit. We talk about the next world in terms of kol. Rambam said before, Yom Shekulo Tov, Yom Shekulo Aruch. It's completely long and it's completely good. We don't bless when we say the Harachaman, right, on Sukkos. We don't say, Harachaman, that Hashem should give us arichas yamim, many, many, many long days. We say what we want is, what we're asking for is yom shekulo aruch. It's entirely long. It's one day that keeps getting longer and longer. It's the same concept. It's not many days increasing the amount of days, but it's one endless day that expands. What expands? The width of it. Yom, it's the day. Shekulo aruch, it's entirely longer and wider. Aruch means wider, expanding, expanding. And Yom Shekulo Tov, the Tov that Hashem gives us, which is the Torah, Lekach Tov, becomes Kulo. It expands and expands, every nuance and every facet. Now, we have a lot of things to talk about here. Rabbi Akiva, very important in the Sfiras Omen, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, he would make the crowns on the Torah. That's very important. What that means, he would be darshaning every single point of every crown on the Torah. What does that mean? Now, it is true that they're written with crowns, but they're trying to tell us something about what Rabbi Akiva did and what his main famous student, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, did. Right? They're trying to explain it to us. Sfiras HaOmer, which Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Akiva factor very greatly, and think about it. We say, Hayom, today is, right? Let's say 37 days, right? Which today is, 37 days, which is 5 weeks, and 2 days to the Omer. What's happening for the Omer? We're not just counting weeks, like the Torah says, count the weeks, and we're not just counting days, we're counting them together. Each time we add a day, what's happening is the group of days is expanding, right? We're adding another day to the group of days that keeps expanding. Today is 7 and 30 days, which is 37 days to the Omer. We're expanding the group of days. It's the same concept. We get to Lag BaOmer, which we just passed. Lag BaOmer is a funny day. On the one hand, the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students and they all died. So what are we celebrating? They stopped dying. It's not that they stopped dying. I mean, what really happened is 24,000 were supposed to die and they died. And then they were dead. It's not that they stopped dying. It wasn't like there were more to die that didn't die. And that whole thing, by the way, with 24,000 is very, 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 also mystical, because that number 24,000 has other implications. 24,000 died by Benos Moav. That was the number. They read into the story of Shechem, because there's Aleph means Aleph, 1,000, and there's 24 Alephs in that few psukim about the killing out of Shechem, that 24,000 died in Shechem. It's a very symbolic number. And to think about 24,000 people dying is over 700 a day. I'm not quite sure. The Gemara often talks in guzma, in riddles and exaggerations and things like that. So we're not quite sure. Maybe it is literal. I don't want to say it's not literal. But what's the point? What we're really focusing on is, it's not that they stopped dying. The plague ran its course completely. So and then we celebrate that. It's not really what we're celebrating. What we're celebrating on Lag BaOmer is that Rabbi Akiva went and established 5 new Talmidim, of which Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is famous, certainly, for Lag BaOmer. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, a student of Rabbi Akiva, who died on Lag BaOmer on the 33rd day, he was the one that began to reveal the kol, the inner hidden meanings, the inner hidden forces and powers that exist behind the mitzvahs and behind the Torah. He started revealing the secrets of the upper worlds, which eventually were recorded and attributed to him much, much, much later in the Zohar. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai represents the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva that's bringing this to the world. However, it's not that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai initiated this, because it's actually that Rabbi Akiva, the one who was darshaning every crown, now we know what crowns mean, was the source of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's understanding. So here's what it says. It says in Tanchuma, so Med B'Midbar Rabba Tanchuma. This is the Medrash. He says this, quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu. First he starts with the pasuk in Zechariah. The pasuk says, V'haya b'yomahu, in the ultimate future, lo yihyeh or yikaros, which is it's very difficult. The light will not be yakor, precious or bright, or kipon, or dim. Right? The sages reinterpret this verse in Bamidbar Rabbah and in Tanchuma for Parshas Chukas, two places they explain the matters. They explain this, that the matters that are precious, expensive, difficult to acquire and perceive in this world, that's the word yakar, will ultimately just float, like the word mekufaya, will just float easily on the surface and be comprehensible. That's what the nature of the next world is going to be. To support this, they bring another quote from Yeshayahu, and Yeshayahu, it says, I will lead the blind on a path they never knew. Holachti ivrim baderech lo yado. I will lead the blind on a path they never knew. I will transform darkness into light for them. These are the things I have done, and I have not neglected them. And to explain the end of the verse, the sages say, these are the things I have done. I have already done for Rabbi Akiva and his companions. In other words, the precious matters that will float to the surface in the ultimate future have already begun to be revealed to Rabbi Akiva. Now, Rabbi Akiva, you know, stands at the 2000th year of Torah. There's 2000 years of tohu vavohu, chaos and blindness, till Avraham. 2000 years from Avraham, the whole story, the two batei mikdash, to the korban of the second base of mikdash, to Rabbi Akiva. He's at the end of the 2000 years. Those are the 2000 years of Torah. The next 2,000 years are called the Emos HaMashiach. It takes 2,000 years. So that's why, by the way, all the nevuahs that they talk about by the end of days don't have to all happen in 3 seconds. They could be spread out over thousands of years. So hopefully, we already went through most of the nesionos and most of the things they speak about for Emos HaMashiach that are scary. But in any case, Rabbi Akiva is at the end. So now we say Rabbi Akiva was darshaning the crowns, and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the fact is that he was able to be Mekayim, a student like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, after he wasn't Mekayim, the 24,000 students. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai brought to the world on Lag BaOmer the beginnings of the understandings of these things. What we're saying is, as we move into the 2,000 years of Yemos HaMashiach, hopefully we're at the end, we're very close to the end, we're living in a world where right here we gather and we increase and we increase, but there's a degree, there's an element of the kol, of the yam, of the expansion, of the kulo tov, kulo aruch, which is really the quality of the next world, that we get some glimpse of it with the Torah of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. But you don't learn that Torah until you're very, very well versed and learned and experienced in the Torah that's nigla, that's revealed to us. You don't go into the nista, but it's been revealed. It's been revealed. The degree of it has been revealed. So here what we're saying is that, to put it all together, is that we're here in the last portion of Sfiras Omer, from Lag BaOmer to Shavuos. We asked, why do we celebrate Shavuos? When that Torah was, that those luchos were shattered and we had to re-accept Torah again on Yom Kippur. And the answer is that a degree of that first Torah is still with us in these Yemos HaMashiach. It's comforting. What do we mean by that? When we dance around, when the men dance around the Torah on Shavuos, they're one of the songs that's very common is Ata Horesa Ladas. You have seen, you've been shown it, so you now know. Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem is God, Heaven Shemayim Alva Arch Mitachas Einot. What happened at Har Sinai? All the blind people, which was us too, our neshamas were there. Our eyes were opened up for a moment. And we saw a glimpse of the kol. We saw a glimpse of the yam, so to speak, the expansion. That's why, as we've spoken about, there's no bechira. There was no bechira possible. That's the mountain over their heads. It wasn't like they had a choice. Of course it was compelling. I mean, they saw everything in one split second. And nothing was hidden anymore. And of course, they're makabel the Torah. And how did they be makabel the Torah? They said, naseh the nishma. It's exactly what we're saying. We'll do it all. We'll do and we'll do and we'll do. And in the future, we'll hear, we'll begin to get understanding. That's the concept of understanding. They say that in the Yemos HaMashiach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do nisim for us. Here, from Micha. Right? Kimei tzeischa mi'eret Mitzrayim, arena niflos. Like the days you left Mitzrayim, I will show you wonders. The sages state that we will undergo the splitting of the sea once again. But the Tikkuni Zohar says, not the physical sea. The splitting of the sea, which is the Yam HaTorah, where all of a sudden, instead of seeing an ocean seething with life that we can't really, you know, venture into, it's like a clear path on dry land, so simple. Everything's so simple, so clear, like a simple, clear path. That's what they explain. Pashut, Pshuto Shel Torah. Everything that was so complicated here, Tzadik V'Ralo, and Chukim, and details of mitzvahs, opens up, the Yam opens up, and it's Pashut, like a simple, straight path, like nothing, and it makes sense. That's the splitting of the sea of the times of, you know, of the future, of the ultimate redemption of the future. And he says here, these words that he uses in Hebrew is, V'yiskale, he says, V'yikra yama de'oraita, the yam of Torah will open up. Hakriyahu sheyehe hayam kmo hayabasha, the ocean will be now like the dry land. Everybody can go through it, below tzakana, without any danger. Danger is spiritual danger, until, you know, confusion, lack of understanding, that creates danger for us. And then it becomes like, the Torah becomes nigla, revealed, kmo yabasha pshuta, like simple dry land, like a path that you could just easily walk down. One more thing. Rambam doesn't bring it down, but there are midrashim that say that in the next world, the tzaddikim sitting there with their crowns are enjoying a suda. They're drawing a suda, and what are they eating? The livyasan. What is the livyasan? What does that mean? What is the livyasan in our you know, world of metaphors? It's in a huge fish that extends from one end of the ocean to the other end of the ocean. That's what it means. And the suda, think about it. What is a suda? Here we're hungry. Here we have questions. The next world is the suda, is the information. And that expands and expands and expands and expands. So the main thing is that here in this world, what we gather for ourselves are things that can expand. And it's every mitzvah, every time you say Tehillim, you don't even know what the words mean necessarily. Every time you daven, every time you speak about Torah, every time you don't do an avera, every time you work hard, every time you struggle in your head, all of that is expanding, is going to expand. So we wish that we're zocha to the gathering and the expansion. Okay, everyone, have a wonderful week. I hope everybody signed the email list and give me back the photocopies if you don't want to keep them. If you want to keep them, you can. Question. You have it in the book already. Question.
We always say, we're saying that it's a different, like the gems and all of that going.